So I want to spend some time together today, and I went and grabbed a stool because it's a small group. It feels casual, so I thought, I'm going to sit down. But I just want to spend a little bit of time, because in the Christian year, Christmas isn't one day, it's 12. Christmastide lasts for over a week. It's, you know, pretty near 2 weeks. And I had kind of a cool moment this week. One of our via crew actually kind of texted and said, hey, can we talk on the phone? And I called, and we had this conversation, and they just wanted to talk about the fact that one day didn't feel like enough. They didn't know yet that they had never really heard that in the Christian year that we give 12 days to it, and they were quite excited to hear about that. And I think it was very cool. It spoke to me of the fact that that we did Advent really well. And when we do Advent really well, when we wait really well, 24 hours isn't long enough. You know, it just seems like, whoa, we just, all this time, we really pressed in and waited and kind of prepared our hearts. And then all of a sudden, Christmas was just like here and gone. And it was like, whoa, did I miss it? You know, it was sort of like too fast. So I love that we could spend a little longer. But, and part of what that means is that today, on this Sunday, we're still in Christmastide. So I want to spend some time and talk about the Incarnation today. I want us to just take a little bit of time. Some of the, like, whirlwind of Christmas is behind us. Christmas Day itself, and if you went to the mall on Boxing Day, which I did with my mom, it's like, why did we do this? This is this crazy, you know. And here we are, we kind of are settled into now this season. And to be able to, with that kind of settledness, with that rest, contemplate the Incarnation, I think is a good idea. Because to understand the Incarnation correctly, to really take it in and understand it, it should cause our jaws to drop. It should just cause us absolute awe and wonder. To think that God himself took on flesh and dwelt among us should grip us. It should really like cause us to jump up out of our seats uncontrollably with worship, with thanksgiving, with excitement. And the word that just keeps coming back to me this Christmas is wonder. With true awe and amazement at what has happened, what God has done for us. And Paul, one of the lectionary readings from today was out of Galatians chapter 4. And I'll read Galatians chapter 4, verses 1 to 7 for you, and then we're going to really focus on verses 4 and 5. But Paul says this, I mean that the heir, as long as he is a child, is no different from a slave. Though he is the owner of everything, but he is under guardians and managers until the date set by his father. In the same way, we also, when we were children, were enslaved to the elementary principles of the world. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons. And because you are sons, God has sent the Spirit of his son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir through God. This passage that I've read is actually intense. It's really full. And we're not going to exegete the whole thing, or we'd be into one of my epic sermons. Not epic in its content necessarily, but in its length. So I'm going to focus on verses 4 and 5. Where some feel that potentially what Paul is doing here in these verses is even quoting or expanding upon a very early Christian creed. When he says, but when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his son, born of woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons. Right in these two short verses, Paul does what Paul does so well. He takes pretty much the entire gospel and sums it up in two verses. He gives us the good news. Boom, right there. But it's centered not around, in this instance, though it points to and definitely pulls in the concepts of death and resurrection, it's centered around the Incarnation. The good news that Jesus came and took on flesh. Sometimes life causes us to wonder. It causes us to doubt, even. But certainly to question whether or not God knows what he's doing. I don't know if you have days like that, if you have had years like that, if you've had, you know, situations like that, where you actually, you know, like, it's God, and so you've walked with him long enough and been to enough sermons and Sunday school lessons to know, yeah, he knows what he's doing, but truly in your heart, where you would begin to wonder, like, does he know what he's doing? Has he forgotten us? Gotten maybe distracted or overwhelmed or busy somewhere else? You ever have those moments where you're thinking, boy, he must be really busy with someone else right now, because I just feel like he totally doesn't have time for me and I need some time, you know? We can start to wonder if God has grown indifferent. Aware of what's going on, but not really concerned. You know, like, is he just grown indifferent or maybe apathetic? Or has he potentially even just become entirely bored with the whole project? Like, did he set out on this thing and just kind of like, you know, he's like the kids at about this point after Christmas with their presents, where it's like the presents just sitting over there beginning to collect dust because they just, it was cool at first, but, you know, like, so is he just sort of checked out, delinquent in his responsibilities? And I know we all know the answers to that. And if someone else asked you that, you would probably go out of your way to try and help assure them and that that wasn't the case. But if we're true with our own hearts, life can cause us to truly wonder these things. Has he fallen asleep? The wheel. Psalm 121 is an incredible psalm where it begins, many of us know this psalm really well. I lift my eyes up to the mountains. From where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. And then he says this in verses 3 and 4. This Lord, this one who keeps me, is the language throughout the psalm, will not let my foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. That there is this recognition on the people of God's part that no matter what it feels like, he's not asleep at the wheel. We know that. And causes us then to maybe start to ask some more helpful questions about what exactly is going on when we can't see God moving, when we can't see God acting. We begin to wonder if maybe he is a bit aloof. But the reality is, he never sleeps, he never slumbers. The God who we worship, the God who we serve, is actually incredibly attentive and intentional. Simple truths, but they're really important to hold on to. That he's actually very attentive. He sees you, he knows what's going on, he hears you when you cry, when you pray, when you reach out. And he is a God of intention. We see the intentionality of God, which is kind of where I want to focus today, because I think the incarnation speaks really clearly to this fact. But we see the intentionality of God right from the beginning in creation. When you open the Bible and you turn to the first page, you see an intentional thing happening. That in the midst of a void, in the midst of nothing, God speaks. Let there be light. And there is light. There's an intentionality in creation. The creation wasn't sort of a random clash of energy that just happened to spawn what we have. Nor was it sort of an evolutionary process that kind of maybe got started with some intention, but then just keeps spiraling in a good direction. So, like, we're just, you know, it's not these things. The creation is intentional on God's part. It was in the beginning, and it continues to be. If you look at Psalm 139, you see a great example of this when the psalmist declares the intentionality and worships God for his intentionality in his own creation. That when God made you, he did it intentionally. So hear these familiar verses from Psalm 139. You formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. Like, really, it just speaks to this intentionality. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance, and in your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there were none of them. We have a very intentional God. And when he made Dave, he did it on purpose, with intention. And he didn't just create Anne with intention in the sense of created Anne and then let it play out. Intention flows right through how he made Anne. Who she is, how she's gifted, all these pieces. That he formed and shaped us like being knit together, intricately woven. This is beautiful language to capture this intentionality on God's part in creation. And it speaks to the character of God. We see that intentionality continue to play out in the story of God and the story of God's people. And so in Exodus chapter 13, we have this really interesting moment to me. It's one that every time I go back, because I know it's there, but I can never remember exactly where, it takes me a minute to find it, because it's kind of like this little side note that's hidden. But when the people of Israel leave the land of slavery to go and they end up at the Red Sea, there's these interesting verses that talk about the intentionality of God when he releases them or frees them from slavery into freedom. As they go to move from the place of their slavery into the land of freedom, into the land of their promise, God, it says that God intentionally doesn't take them the quick route. He doesn't take them the straight shot through the Philistines. He takes them around. Because he knows if he takes them through the land of the Philistines, they're all going to freak out and go back to Egypt. And so he takes them the long way. It's kind of an interesting expression or example of the intentionality of God. One that maybe if we really think it through doesn't get us quite as excited as the first one. The reality that God knows what's best for us, and sometimes his intentionality in relationship to or response to what's best for us doesn't make sense to us at the time. In fact, is actually kind of inconvenient or troublesome, costly. Not only does he take them around the long way, but that long way actually ends them up in a pretty precarious situation. They end up on the banks of the Red Sea with no passage. And an Egyptian army coming hot on their tail. And the intentionality of God put them there. Very interesting. We could go on and on where we see this intentional hand of God. I didn't have this in my own, but like one of those great examples is Jesus right after his baptism, when the Spirit takes him to the wilderness to be tempted. There's intentionality on God's part, even when not only can I not see it, but I would equate the situation or what I'm going through with an unintentionality on God, with almost like an indifference on his part. God very well may be saying, oh, don't worry, I'm always intentionally at work. So you might find yourself in situations that didn't come about by the hand of God. So in the situation, you know, he's not bringing like darkness into your life intentionally, but in the darkness, he's moving intentionally. Bishop Todd usually puts it this way. He works both sides of the chessboard. If you play chess, if you're any good at it, I can play, but I'm not very good at it. I guess one of the things that the better players can do is they can make moves that make you make moves. And they call that working both sides of the chessboard. They kind of goad you into, you know, it's like, oh, I can work with that. Ooh, you just put me in a precarious situation. I can make a move that I can. There's ways in which even when the enemy thinks he just got the upper hand, Jesus goes, you have no idea. There was intention in the move I made right before. You're playing right into my hand. He moves. But there's this intentional God at work alongside it in the darkness. And nothing speaks, I don't think there's anything that speaks to the intentionality of God like the life of Jesus. Starting in the incarnation. The life, death, resurrection, and ascension of Jesus. There is this intentional hand of God at work right from the beginning. And Paul captures this really well in Galatians chapter 4. It starts this way. He shows us that there is intentionality in the incarnation in its timing, when it happened. Paul says, when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his Son. For hundreds of years, God's people had lived under the law. They'd lived with an Abrahamic promise, the Mosaic, this messianic promise of the prophets. One of the other lectionary passages today was a beautiful prophecy out of Isaiah that so clearly speaks to the Messiah's coming, to the that Christ fulfilled. There's all these promises that they live with for hundreds of years, waiting and longing and wondering, when will this happen? And in some ways throughout it, come throughout those years, and I'm sure some people felt like they were coming to it on a weekly basis, these places that felt a little bit metaphorically like the banks of the Red Sea. Like, we're kidding ourselves if we think that throughout this waiting, there weren't moments when they just grabbed Psalms, like, what's it, Psalm 13 or 14? How long, O Lord? There's this hunger, this longing, this anticipation. But in through it all, an intentional God that is very much at work, and in the fullness of time, it says, sent his Son. The incarnation was a divine and a sovereign action of God at the right and perfect time. That what we see in the incarnation as it relates to timing is an intentionality on God's part. That he sent his Son when he sent his Son. In time and space, there was an intentionality there. This timing piece, though, the delays especially, are major contributors to our doubt. They're major factors in our question and in our wondering sometimes. But the incarnation speaks to our hearts today, even today where we're waiting. It speaks something of hope. Because in the incarnation, we see that in this space, in time, in humanity, there was an intentionality of God displayed that is forever true of him. That God moves with intention in our lives. The people here that Paul describes are like children with an inheritance, who they have a promise, but they're really not a lot different in some ways than slaves, because that inheritance is under guardianship or mediation. And so he's referring to like a Roman way of life where you could have this inheritance, but until you came of age, until the right time, it didn't really benefit you. It was under the control or the management of a guardian. And he says this, they are like slaves, but they aren't slaves in this, that they are waiting with confidence, assurance for the day their father set. That unlike a slave, they have an inheritance. So today, it looks very, very much the same. But the future looks very different. Because it's a matter of timing, not of if. A matter of when. When the fullness of time had come, God sent his Son. And when Jesus comes in the incarnation, it's with perfect timing. And it reminds me, it takes me back again to the Red Sea, where like, in perfect time, that sea splits wide open, allowing the people of God to cross over in safety and the Egyptian army to get in there just in time to be swallowed up. The timing of God is actually perfect. There's intention in his timing. The fullness of time, the incarnation is a fulfillment, a fullness, a fulfilling of all these prophetic promises. And in the incarnation, all time is impacted. That an eternal God takes on flesh in the temporal. He enters time and space, but from outside of it. And as he does that, we see this grand theological term at play, this recapitulation. The past, the present, and the future are impacted in the moment. That when Christ takes on humanity, he takes on and enters into it for all humanity. And what he does in that place, in the past, redeems the past. In the future, secures the future. And right in the present, enters into time and space and takes on flesh. Flesh like yours, flesh like mine. There's great intention in the timing of the incarnation. Both in the present, but also in the timing of God, in that he brings together past, present, and future and sets up the redemption of all of it. When I was thinking about the intention of God in the incarnation, I can't ever escape the Lord of the Rings quote where Gandalf answers back to Frodo, who's upset with his timing. A wizard is never late, nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to. Every time that happens in the movie, I can't help but chuckle. Just think, oh man. But in such a great capturing on Tolkien's part, that idea, you know. And then, of course, the guys who made the movie really captured this piece. There's something about this figure that you don't question things like his timing. He goes, no, I'm not later. The timing of God was intentional. Calls us in the incarnation to a bit of a surrender, to a bit of a submission, to a story or to a picture, to a God who's so much bigger and up to so much more than we can really comprehend or understand. The intentionality of God is then seen in how he came. Paul says he was born. And right there we have to stop. Because that is the moment that encapsulates that one word, he was born, into what happened. God took on flesh and dwelt among us. He came into time and space, and God incarnate. God took on humanity. He entered right into the human story. One of the writers that I read talked about the fact he could have come in many different ways. I mean, I'm just a human, and I could think of all kinds of cool things he could have done. He didn't. He came in the form of a child, born of a woman. And when it says that he was born of a woman, Paul is wanting us to catch, to see, that Jesus takes on flesh, entering humanity so that he can redeem humanity. That he has to take on the thing in which he's about to redeem. And so he takes on flesh in order to redeem it. He's born under the law. Jesus submits himself to the law. He's circumcised. This was the story we meet similarly. He comes in and under the law, and he lives in it so that he could fulfill it and thus redeem those under it. Because all of us were under the law. And the law was good, except for one small problem. We couldn't pull it off. And so the very thing that had in it the ability to save became in some ways our condemnation, the very place of it, where the law became this unattainable thing. Jesus comes in and fulfills the law and thus gains the ability to redeem those who are under it. I wish I had time to read you this Athanasius quote. I'm going to put it up on the website with the sermon. You can read it later. He speaks into this stuff of incarnation so beautifully. But the third thing that I want to point to in the intention of God is he was intentional in his timing. He was intentional in how he came. But he was, and this is probably the most mind-blowing and exciting part, he was intentional in why he came. He came intentionally to save you. He came intentionally to redeem fallen humanity. And that is the big point that Paul's wanting us to catch. Paul says in Galatians 4, verse 5, he came to redeem those who were under the law so that we might receive adoption as sons. John 3:16 reminds us, we talked about this last week, love led to the intentional action of God in the incarnation. That he looked on fallen humanity from the moment of its fall with intention to redeem it. And when Christ comes in the flesh, we see, here it comes. Here's the grand move on God's part. an intentional move to redeem. Why? Because he loves you. It should just drop our jaws to the floor. Christmas should just absolutely, we should be like giddy children. I'm loved so much by my Creator that he took on flesh. He took on humanity to redeem mine. Wow. Jesus took on flesh, and he took on flesh to die. This blows my mind. That he took on, and the intentionality of God was to come into flesh to die. To enter into the full of the human story. Birth, life, death. But with a really exciting caveat. He would do it in the fullness. Where Adam, the first man, failed, and all of us subsequently, Christ comes and fills the intention of God for humanity in its fullness. And so in his death, is able to conquer it, rise above it, and make possible our resurrection. The intentionality of God was always resurrection life. And sin broke the plan. Sin, it got in and mucked the whole picture up. And God didn't kind of throw his hands up in the air and say, oh, lost that one. He intentionally acted. That's grace. That's mercy. Like the incarnation, just wow. Jesus took on flesh to die and so to defeat death and redeem us from it. So in response to the incarnation today, the good news of what Jesus did at Christmas, the good news of a Savior come into our lives, I want to read to you a really cool passage from Irenaeus, who was one of the very first church fathers, one of the first, if not the first, theologian, really begins to expand the ideas and to dig in. And he does it in response to heresy. But Irenaeus wrote on the incarnation at length. And he wrote on the impact, and he was one of those guys who was giddy about the incarnation. He just thought, wow, this is unbelievable. And when you miss it, you missed it. Like, you missed all of it. Like, this is so central to everything. And this one passage that I want to read to you speaks about the artistry of God, the intentional action of God in our lives, as seen throughout the story of God, but certainly in the incarnation. And it uses language of art. It uses language of a creator. And so I wanted to read it for us today. Many of you are very creative, and so this will maybe be helpful language for your hearts to be able to take hold of the story today and to live into the incarnation this week. How can you be a God when you have not yet become a man? How can you be perfect when you have only just been made? How can you be immortal when in your mortal nature you do not obey the Maker? You must hold the rank of man before you partake of the glory of God. You did not make God. God made you. And if you're the handiwork of God, await the craftsman's hand patiently. He does everything at a favorable time. Favorable, that is, to you whom he made. Offer him your heart, pliant and unresisting. Preserve the form in which the craftsman fashioned you. Keep within you the water which comes from him. Without it, you harden and lose the impact of his fingers. By preserving the structure, you will ascend to perfection. God's artistry will conceal the clay within you. His hand formed your substance, and he will coat you within and without in pure gold and silver. He will adorn you so well that the king himself will delight in your beauty. But if you harden and reject his artistry, if you show him your displeasure at being made man, Your ingratitude to God will lose you both his artistry and his life. Making is a property of God's generosity. Being made is a property of man's nature. I'm going to read that one again, that line again for you. Making is a property of God's generosity. Being made is a property of man's nature. If therefore you hand over to him what is yours, faith in him and subjection to him, you will receive the benefit of his artistry and be God's perfect work of art. If, on the other hand, you resist him and flee from his hands, the cause of your imperfection will lie in you. The light does not fail because of those who have blinded themselves. It remains the same, while the blinded are plunged into darkness by their own fault. Light never forces itself on anyone, nor does God use compulsion on anyone who refuses to accept his artistry. So as we consider the intentionality of God, the intentionality of our Creator, who created you with intention in your beginning and continues creative work in you by way of sanctification as he continues to work and shape, will you let him intentionally shape you, adorn you, redeem you? The incarnation is incredible, but it's much like a gift. We talked with the kids about this on Christmas Eve. It's worth very little if not received, not taken hold of. The impact of the incarnation is transformative when it's received, lived into, allowed to run its course, surrendered to, submitted to. Will you, as Irenaeus encourages, await the craftsman's hand patiently? And I want to bless you today to just rest and wait on an intentional God, with hope and trust, faith, that he will move. Will you, as Irenaeus encourages, offer him your heart, pliant and unresisting? In light of the incarnation, before God and before Christ, hand over to him what is yours. Faith in him and subjection to him. And receive in return the promise of redemption. If we'll allow ourselves to receive, to enter into, to lean into the incarnation this Christmas, the promise is nothing short of redemption. Irenaeus sums it up this way: you will receive the benefit of his artistry and be God's perfect work of art. That the intentional hand we see in the incarnation would intentionally touch, shape, heal, free, forgive, make, redeem you. So Jesus, we thank you for the incarnation today, and we thank you for the intention of God in our lives, in our creation, and in our sustaining. The author and the perfecter of our faith is an intentional God who will never leave us or forsake us, who's never slow, who's never fast, but who moves with intentional timing in our lives, whose actions are very calculated, who knows what's best for us. And we want to thank you today that we are in the care and the heart of a God of such intention. Thank you, Lord. declare it over our lives, over our hearts today, over every situation, and even as we come to the table. And remember together again how far that intentionality will go. We pray that we would be drawn into a confidence, into a deeper place of faith in the intentionality of God, even in the days and the moments, the spaces where we can't see it.